Welcome to Breaking Doctrine, presented to you by the Combined Arms Doctrine Directorate at the Combined Arms Center at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. The views expressed here are those of the individual and do not represent the views of the Combined Arms Center, U.S. Army, or U.S. government.
Welcome to Breaking Doctrine, a U.S. Army Combined Arms Center podcast on emerging doctrine and the Army's vision of warfare. Hello, I'm Lieutenant Colonel Lisa Becker, and I'm your host through our 12 Days of Doctrine. Today, on the fifth day of doctrine, Special Doctrine Division is giving to you, our listeners, hot wings. Now, I'm not here today to debate who has the best tasting wings, hottest wing sauce, or if dry rub wings are the best way to go. No, today the wings refer to the badges we see aviation personnel wearing on their uniform. I sit down with Lieutenant Colonel Bill Lewis, the Doctrine and Tactics Division Deputy at Fort Novosel. We'll explore why the content and length of doctrinal publications may matter to aviators and all Army professionals. Later, we review how the aviation branch is thinking about observations on today's battlefield. Let's join the conversation. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you.
The first thing that I'd like to start off with our conversation is earlier today in the bigger forum, that we had a conversation revolving around the number and size of our publications and, you know, how specific publications should be. So I'd like to hear more of your opinion on this. What are you seeing as the pros and cons of different sizes and numbers of publications?
Yeah, so I'll give the spiel because that's kind of how we teach it. So we, the Aviation Center of Excellence, do a pretty good job, I think, of providing a doctrinal placemat and for not only our down and in publications, so kind of our playbook of how we fight, but also the up and out publications that directly impact Army aviation. And in those placemats, we provide that throughout the professional military education pipeline in Army aviation. So we do that in your officer basic course for warrant officers and commissioned officers, and then we do it throughout the warrant officer PME, and then we also do it in the captain's career course and through the pre-command course for both battalion and brigade commanders. Those placemats are user-friendly, so they provide quick hot links to U.S. Army publications, and then that allows them to quickly download and reference those publications. We have a lot of publications because I think in aviation we have to be explicit, and then the other thing is our doctrinal hierarchy requires specificity, right? So if you compare us to maybe not other Army branches but other services with aviation components, we're about on par, specifically with the Marine Corps. They condense a lot of their publications, which is kind of interesting. We do a slightly different condensing of our publications. They take their aircrew training manual, and that's their officer professional development timeline. So they basically take what you're supposed to do as an aviator and then as an officer and then as a leader, and they put that all in one book, which is interesting. We don't necessarily do that. We are condensing our publications, I think, based off some guidance, but I think that's a cautionary tale. As you've looked in the recent history, so over the last 3 years, four specific Class A accidents where you've either had a significant loss of aircraft over a certain dollar amount or a significant injury or loss of life of Army aircraft have been directly investigated, and in the outputs of those investigations are that we needed to put back into our Army doctrine things that we took out when we condensed publications. That's kind of interesting. Our other brother and sister organizations, when we asked them about loss of tail rotor effectiveness, loss of tail rotor authority, uncommanded yaw, they had that. When we transitioned to our fundamentals of flight, that's where we lost it. If we condense all the publications, I think we lose a side of the forest, you know, behind the tree, because we're so focused on having a single book of everything that no one's going to read it.
Yeah, I know for myself personally, if it's a smaller book, let's say ADP 313, that's one that just came out, and it's not, I have it in paper form, it's not super thick, you know, so it's like, oh, okay, just visually seeing that, I'm like, okay, I can digest that. But, you know, when you have those ones that are greater than an inch, and I'm dating myself because I'm not talking digital.
I was with you when we got our pubs library, so it was two boxes.
You know, it's visually just more intimidating. Hard, like, how am I going to make it through this? So other than maintaining separate and very specific doctrine, do you think there's something that we as the doctrine community can do to help that?
Yes. And I made a comment earlier with the ALSA gentleman who asked if we needed to print publications. In Army Aviation, which is, you know, different from other branches, we have to have our checklist printed, right? We have to have paper copies of certain things in the aircraft as required by our regulation, which is probably different. I look at doctrine as who the audience is. So if we're going to write doctrine, and one of the quotes I think from the CAD director was, doctrine is a soldier's weapon system. Well, let's define that. It needs to be functional, and in that capacity, it's got to work for that soldier in all operational environments, and it's got to be applicable to the mission at hand. And if it doesn't meet those requirements, then it's not going to be the soldier's weapon system. So if we have ginormous pubs that are 2 or 3 inches thick, if you print them out, or 600 to 700 pages, that's not applicable. But if you have pamphlet type TTPs or techniques publications or an SOP that you can easily reference or give to a certain echelon of a leader, then I think that makes it relevant. And doing that is how you're going to make doctrine a weapon system for that soldier.
Awesome. I want to shift to what you guys are doing at AFCO in terms of what you're thinking about, researching, what's on the horizon.
So a few things, right? So General Gill's top priority is airspace management and communication to an aircrew. And a reason communication to an aircrew is top priority is, how do we get mission orders to a dispersed aviation formation in a large-scale combat operation where they can get orders to maneuver, support, you know, assist, or displace as required. Currently, we don't have that, so that's kind of a challenge and a gap that CDID's working on. And then the other thing is airspace management with your different types of UAS. So the maneuver center kind of owns what we consider the smalls, which is type 1 and type 2 unmanned aerial systems that they can easily, you know, throw up and use for reconnaissance or reuse, you know, use for security or something along that lines. Whereas Army Aviation kind of owns a little bit bigger stuff with the type 3, 4, and 5. So your tactical strategic UAS. And how are we coming together to, you know, collaborate usage in airspace? We also have to do that with our joint counterparts of the Marine Corps and Air Force and Navy. So that's one of our focus, I should say, is sensor to shooter. Because those three things that we're all talking about, right? So the ability to either have a UAS platform or a sensor provide targeting information and then get that information to actually action it. We're seeing through our CTC, so that's this big disconnect for the maneuver center. And we should foster and chaperone that as Army Aviation, because we have some good TTPs and techniques with what we've seen.
So you're saying the CTCs, you're learning stuff. One of the things that you're learning is that you need to be more incorporated with MCO?
Yes, 100%. So one of the lessons learned from JRTC specifically is that the small UAS are seeing targets. And this is the sensor to shooter topic. So the small UAS are seeing targets. However, they're not being actioned by fires, attack aviation, launched effects, or you know, some type of either kinetic or non-kinetic action to either remove, dislocate, disrupt, destroy the target. And they're seeing that at JRTC and NTC. I think aviation and the maneuver center need to collaborate on that in order to help each other solve the problem, and then collectively do that. So I think General Gill's priorities are collaborative in nature. I think we need to work with the other COEs to write doctrine in unison and support each other. So whether we chaperone the program for the Type 1 and Type 2 UAS with our maneuver center brethren for training support packages or some type of progression for first-person video UAS platforms to provide that initial training, which we're currently doing at Fort Huachuca. They're currently teaching the 15 whiskey program of instruction on small UAS platforms. And they're doing that because that provides relevance when they go out to either a brigade combat team or brigade element or a combat aviation brigade, because then they can get that first person video UAS, or they can get the UAS platform and they can fly that. So that's kind of what Army Aviation is doing and what DOTD at the Aviation Center of Excellence is working on, that's trying to transform in contact. From our director, Colonel Keith, his focus for aviation doctrine, tactics, survivability, the whole DOTD picture, is to make Army Aviation flexible and reliable and applicable. So rather than, you know, standing and writing our own doctrine and being concerned with what we're putting forward, it's to collaborate and integrate with the other centers of excellence to ensure that we're assisting them and building the fight together and building the playbook together. And so you'll see that, I think, with airspace management. We're going to attend all the conferences between the joint conference at Langley and then the one back up here for Army Aviation Airspace. And then the Air Force one, Army Aviation, is going to be going around the other COEs to kind of help develop the doctrine from the other DOTDs.
You know, we didn't talk counter UAS, so I'm assuming you're going to be integrated with the fire center also.
Yeah, so one of the things that we're doing, right, is we're looking at our UAS and how we're employing it. And when we find out what the future UAS platform will be, we'll write the doctrine to employ that. On the counter aspect of that, we're sending our subject matter experts over to the fire COE to show them, A, how we can employ it to the best of our ability so that they can counter that, and then also how to integrate. We have certain capabilities on the H-64 Apache that they can see with the FCR and shoot with certain munitions, UAS. And so we would like to integrate that into the protection platform of counter UAS.
Awesome. Thanks. There's so much stuff going on. It's fun to talk with everybody because it is so integrated. You can't be in like a bubble anymore because of how integrated it is.
Yeah.
Thanks. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely.
Just like writing new doctrine is a team effort, breaking doctrine takes a team. Without the Kerr and Special Doctrine Division here at CAD, we wouldn't be able to bring you this show. Please don't forget to subscribe on Amazon Music, Apple, Odyssey, Audible, Spotify, or YouTube. Also, go ahead and follow us on social media at U.S. Army Doctrine to get updates on new podcasts, Doctrine Digest videos, and publications. Finally, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect the official position of the United States Army, the U.S. Army Training and Doctrine Command, or the Combined Arms Center. I'm Lieutenant Colonel Lisa Becker, and this has been Breaking Doctrine.